We're going to talk tonight about Gidon. And we're in the middle of talking about Gidon's war. And Gidon got together when he went to wage war against Midian. He got together 300 people he was left with. He started off with an army of 32,000. Then 22,000 were sent away by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, asked him to send away in the first shift. And then in the second shift, HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked him the second way to send away another 9,700. In the end, he was left with 300 out of the original 32,000 soldiers.
I ask you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did the first screening.
Yeah.
And he reduced it to X number. Why did Gidon then today to go even beyond that?
Oh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said,
no,
HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to do both of them. If you take a compulsive dial, which is on the top page, on 60 actually, over here, it says, Vayomer Hashem el Gidon, Oda Amrav, it's still too many, send away, make a second selection, and send away another 9,700. Okay, so let's take it now from Pasuk Ches, where after they are left with 300 people, Vayichu Asateda Ambiyodam, so on the top hand left, page 61, Vayichu Asateda Atseda, the nation who was left took the supplies of all the people that left, their shofarim and their shofaros, because just like every company has a bugle, so too in the old days every company had a shofar to blow. Kol ish Yisrael shilach ish la'olav, and all the rest of the Jews he sent each one to his tent. V'shlosh me'otzo ish hechazik, he kept these 300. U'machane midyon, and the camp of Midian, Hayalo Mitachas, was beneath him, Bo'emek, down below in the valley.
I'm
so
cold.
It's okay.
Two very big questions. One is, Yamin Noraim, always one of the drushes is built around the multiple uses.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them was Chatzot Likrat Milchama.
Right.
Which were born by the Kohanim.
Which were born by the Kohanim. Right.
Therefore, what is it that each shaven has not concentrated in the hands of the Kohanim?
Yeah.
And second, that everybody blew rather than the
these are clearly not shofaros of mitzvah. Besides the blowing of the chatzotros, which was, they blew chatzotros, the trumpets for war, besides that mitzvah, there was the actual battle cry. In other words, as each nation go, each legion or each battalion go into war, they blast the horn of battle in order to rally the troops and in order to shore up the morale. So this shofar is not the shofar of mitzvah, necessarily. Yeah. Not shofar mitzvah. We're going to see, of course, it has very advantageous use, but really it's going to be used here tactically and not religiously.
The other thing is, I come to ask this filtering out of the numbers. I've been reversing it. Because Baruch was the one who uses the stairs and says, screen out, you don't need so many in order to reduce it to three.
Yeah.
We're only left to speculate, and that's all we can do. Why HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in this particular struggle against Midian, would have thought it to magnify the net, or the triumph, by screening.
You want to speculate why?
Husha artists, in the Midbar, from the first encounter, under Moshe Yoshua, there never was this kind
you
of...
You want to speculate why? Why not? I'll tell you what I speculate there. What I speculate is that we're going to see consistently that Gidon is what we call Miksanei Amana, a person of little faith, little trust in God. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to improve Gidon, because Gidon is going to be a show faith. He's not going to be a particularly good one, no offense to Gidon, but he's not going to be a particularly good show faith. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to educate him, trying to make him, give him a lesson in Emunah, Chizuk Emunah. It's not going to work. But that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to do here. Show him, look, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so powerful. What?
And you're getting in hotter water. At least by the way you're presenting it.
It's hotter water?
Hotter water.
Why?
HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to educate him.
Yeah.
But it isn't going to work.
That's right. But you didn't have free will. Gidon should be deprived of his free will.
Yeah, all right. It's so strange.
Hey, God tries to educate all of us and it don't necessarily work. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Shluchim all the time to try and educate us, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't listen. It's the bottom line. If everybody has free will, as Kurdish Baruch Hu tries, he sends all sorts of Yisurim, he sends all sorts of messengers. Doesn't necessarily always work because the Kurdish Baruch Hu doesn't ever tip the scale too far. He leaves man with the
Chil Chatzim. It's so obvious. It's so obvious.
Well,
I'm not sure I want to agree with anybody. We find over and over again parallels in the Nusach, in the scenes, the situations of the Avot, certainly of Moshe Rabbeinu.
Yeah.
And Moshe Rabbeinu, after Chorev, it's almost even in the language. He don't is repeating.
You're right. No, it's true. Moshe Rabbeinu.
The only distinction you could say is Gideon should have had greater faith, because since he was a contemporary of Moshe, he lived afterwards, he would have chronicled and known and taught all the Nisim.
Of course, exactly. And besides, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was educated, he learned. It's only Gideon who had this problem, he wouldn't learn. That's what we're going to see in a minute. Yeah, we don't know that yet. We're not going to know that for a long time to come. But at the end, we're going to see Gideon and his family cause diamond throw many, many great sorrows, more his family than Gideon himself, but we'll see that later on. In the meantime, Riba Lailahu came to pass on that night. Now, this night, Lailahu is an interesting usage. We find it several times in the Tanakh. Can you think of another one offhand very quickly? Right, Balailu, by Pitzin Sarim, what else do we see that? Balailu, Nodadosh, Nasamelch, and the Megillah. They're all the same night, more or less, if you ever take one or two nights. They all occurred on one Yontif. Which Yontif? Pesach. This is Pesach, and the Megillah is Pesach. Right, but Pesach, it's not necessarily Tetz, who is Tetz of Nisan, but it's Pesach time. And Balailu, who obviously is like, this is one of the, one of the things in Agoda, one of the Pizmonim, one of the songs in Nirtza is Vahiba Chatzia Laila, right? So then Gideon is also mentioned there. Esther, Gideon, a whole bunch of things which happen in the middle of the night. So it seems like this Pesach is what we say, Leil Shimurim, not just the first night of Pesach, but the whole Pesach holiday is a time which has been invested with the potential, the segula, for Geula throughout the generations. So Balailahu, on that night it came to pass, Bayomei Lov Hashem, God said to him, Kum, arise, Rei Bamachaneh, go down into the camp, Kinesati Biyadecha, because I gave it over to you and it's yours. Now look what God has to tell him. You see, God has to educate Gideon. V'im Yorei Atol Aredes, if you're still Miktani Amona and you're still afraid, I tell you what, you go down and do this. Rei Atol, go down, by yourself, upura narcha, and pura your boy, your servant, el.
What?
Us?
And pura
your boy,
narcha.
Hey, pura is his name. Pura narcha means his, that was his name. No, pura narcha. El amachanez, go down to the camp. Vishamata meitabeu, and you'll hear what they're talking about. And afterwards it'll fortify your hands. And then you go down and fight in the war. So needless to say, of course, Gideon needed this chizuk. So Pura, he and Pura, his servant, his aide de camp, I guess we would say, went down to the edge of the those who are armed, Asher b'machaneh, who were in the camp.
We're left to speculate what they heard.
Oh no, we're not. We're going to know this. We'll see exactly what they heard. We're going to see exactly. Right? We're just starting. Umidjan v'amolek, v'chol mnei kedem, down in the valley, Midjan, Amolek, and all the people of the east, Noflim v'amik, they're falling over, all over each other in the valley, Karabel arov, like locusts. There were so many of them. V'ligmalei m'amispon, there was no end to their camels. Kachol shal tfatsa yom l'arov, it was like the sand on the seashore. There were so many camels down there. V'avogido, Gideon, and one of the sentries was telling over to his friend a dream which he had. Vayomer, he said, "Hinei chalom chalanti, I dreamt a dream. Hinei tzliel lechem sorim, a tzliel is a large sound, kind of like an echo. I heard the echo of a barley bread, mitapech b'machaneh, as it was turning over in the tent, machaneh b'John. Vayavoyakehu, and he came to the tent. The barley bread came to the tent. Vayakehu, and it hit the tent. Vayipol, and the tent fell. Vayavchehu lemala, and first it fell upside down. Vinufalo, and then the tent collapsed altogether. So it's interesting. Why barley? Why in his dream, which of course was intended for Gideon Pia, was it barley? So the same thing Taka happened, like we said before, by Mordechai and Esther. When Haman came in with the Levush and the Sus, as the Gemara says in Megillah Tatzvah, what were they learning? When he came into Mordechai's yeshiva, Mordechai was sitting with the Bachrim and was learning the Sugya of Karban HaOmer. They're learning all about the Karban HaOmer. And the Karban HaOmer, of course, was because that was the Inyan of the Yomer. The Karban HaOmer was brought on the second day of Pesach, and that was, I know, the second, the third day of Pesach was the time of Pesach. So Haman says, your Karban HaOmer overcame me. And here, of course, the same thing is referred to, because here also say about Lechem Seorim, barley bread. What comes from barley? The barley is, of course, what the Karban HaOmer comes from. And this is the time of Karban HaOmer. And the symbolism here, according to the Maharal, though the Maharal makes a connection between Purim and Gideon's episode here, he says that the lesson of the Omer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is capable of manipulating and has the Vahashgacha, divine control, which can cause even the most coarse and natural process. Barley is considered to be a very coarse grain, much more than wheat. Even the most coarse and natural process can be overturned by God, or can be used by God for His purposes. So therefore, here too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to send to Gideon the message that Jews are unique. They're not subject to the laws of nature. Even things that seem to be coarse and difficult and resistant, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can overcome them very easily. That's what the message of Karban HaOmer was to Mordechai, and the message of Karban HaOmer was to Gideon. The truth is, there's an interesting other Lashon here, which is also reminiscent of the Megillah, Vayavcheu, which is representative of the Napochu, which we have by the Megillah. And in fact, the Malvin says that they came now, this is the time of the barley harvest, the Midianites came to usurp the Jewish barley harvest. The Napochu, the barley was that which figuratively overcame the Midianim with the power of the Karban HaOmer. Vayanrehu, and in fact his friends, the sentry to whom he related the dream, answered him, Vayomer, and he says, Ainzos, this cannot be anything else, Bilti, except Imcherev Gideon ben Yoash, the sword of Gideon, the son of Yoash, Ish Yisrael, a man of Yisrael, in other words, a person of the might of Yisrael. Yisrael, we know, is the power to transcend nature, to fight with angels, and overcome any difficulty. And the Midianite soldier who was interpreting the dream obviously understood, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted in his mind as a sign that Am Yisrael has this power of Yisrael of overcoming all adverse circumstances. Dasan Elokim b'yodos Midian. God gave us the Gideon's hand, Midian, that's Kolamachan, and all the rest of the camp as well. So this fortified Gideon, of course. Vayi kishma Gideon, when Gideon heard as Misparachalom, the story of the dream, that's Shivro, and its interpretation. It's interesting because the word Shivro literally means the way you break the dream. And breaking, of course, means interpreting. You break the code of the dream. Lishbor, right? But besides that, we have in favor graces, we have an interesting... Lishbor, Lishbor also. Yeah, Vayar Yaakov ki eshever b'mitzrayim. And there Chazal say it can also be read Sever. Sever with a Samach would mean hope. And here too, it means also, besides the interpretation of the dream, there was hope, which was granted to Gideon by this dream which he heard from this from the centuries being interpreted there at the edge of the camp. Vayishtachu. So Gideon bowed down before God. In other words, he was grateful to God for God's impending Yeshua. Vayoshev al-Machane Yisrael. And he came back to the Jewish camp. Vayomi, he said, Kumu, arise. He knows an Hashem b'yedchem es machne Midian. Because God has given into your hands the camp of Midian. In other words, he told the 300 people, this is it, guys. We're going to win this war. So now he's divided up the 300 people and used a very, very interesting strategy. And the Malbim identifies 8 components of the strategy. First of all, Vayachat Shlosh Mil Sa'ish. He divided up the 300 people, Shlosh Roshim, into 3 groups. The second thing is Vaitain Shofros Biar Kulam. He gave everybody Shofros so they can make a lot of noise. The third thing is V'kadim Reikim V'lapidim Misochas Kadim. He gave them the torches, which is going to make the torch is going to make light and smoke, and he had them put inside jars. So at first they wouldn't be seen, and when they would be seen, there would be a tremendous element of surprise because they would have to break the jars in order to display the torches which were inside the jars. Vayomer Aleihem, he said to them, Mimeni Tiru, you'll see me. In other words, I'm going to coordinate things. That's the fifth aspect here. V'chein tasu, and you will do as I do. And v'ne anochi ba b'kseh machneh, I'm going to come first to the edge of the camp. V'yok asher asem, like I do, chein tasu, so too you should do as well. And here we have the sixth strategy issue here, which is direction. There's somebody in charge. Gideon is going to lead everybody else. Now, besides that, we find here in the next pasuk, the sakati b'shofar, I'm going to blow my shofar. Anochi, again, I provide the direction. B'chol sheretin, all who are those who are in my group of 100, uskatem b'shofros gamatem, and you should blow the shofros as well. Svivos kol machne, all around the camp. Here we find the 7 angle, which was surrounding. No, they turn on 3 sides in order to leave the Midianites one way to escape.
Why?
Right? We're gonna see what happens. Vamartem, and the final thing which he said is Lashem Gidon. You should cry out for God and for Gidon, which was kind of invoking the miraculous nature of this war by calling on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to provide the Yeshua. That's true. Gideon obviously did hold that he was
me with a little assistance from God.
Well, not a little, but you're right. Gideon, certainly we're going to see that later on. That's a good point. Gideon has a good focus, let's call it a healthy focus on himself as a leader. And it says here, it's interesting, Targum here, the Targum Yadisav and Uziel, if you look right at the above, the same one, you should say, Charba de Miktola min Chonam Hashem, a sword which smites from before God, but the victory will be completed by Gideon. So he's obviously intends to take active credit here. Vayovo Gideon, Umei Yishisherito. Of course, they are contributed to Gideon. They don't serve tribute to God. They're the goyim.
Well,
Gideon.
So
maybe that hand to serve. That could be. That's true. Vayovo Gideon Mei Yishisherito. So Gideon and his camp of 100 guys, they came to Bikseh Machneh, to the edge of the camp. Rosh Hashmoreh Satichona, they came at the beginning of the middle watch, which is 10 p.m. theoretically. The night is divided into 3 watches, 4 hours each, so let's say from 6 to 10, 10 to 2, and 2 to 6. So they came at the beginning of the second watch, when the Malbim says, the first watch is going off duty and going to sleep. The second watch is still groggy from getting up. So therefore, it's an ideal time to cause mass confusion. And this is what it says here. They just woke up. The second watch is good watchman. And they blew the shofros. And broke the pitchers which were in their hands. But this is not yet describing it. This is just giving us a general overview. They blew all 3 groups in their shofros. And they broke their pitchers, their jars. And they held in their left hand the torches, and their right hand the shofaros to blow. Vayikra, a period. Let me stop here for a second. Now, it's interesting that the Navi stresses that the torch is in the left and the shofar in the right. And I believe this is stressed for a religious reason, not just for a strategic reason, because who cares what hand they hold which object in. But I believe that there's a religious issue here, which is that the shofar is representative of their connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Because we know shofar... We know the shofar, right? The shofar is the represents on Rosh Hashanah the entry lifnim, entering is into the sanctorum of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why a shofar is not allowed to be made out of a cow's horn. A shofar is not allowed to be made with gold, because just like the Kohen Gadol couldn't go with gold into the Kodesh Kodoshim on Yom Kippur, because Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, the prosecutor of the golden calf, cannot become the defending attorney of the Kohen Gadol of Yom Kippur. So too, the shofar also cannot be made of, for that reason also, as well, out of a cow horn. So the shofar represents that which brings us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the right hand. That's always primary. The lapid, the torch, represents fire. And fire is always used to eradicate evil. That is the left hand. And in fact, we know that in fact is the way things are divided up in Kabbalah. Chesed, which means expanding and joining with others, is always attributed to the right side. Din, which means contracting or meeting out judgment towards others, not coming close to them in a good sense, but drawing away from them and then punishing them, that's always associated with the left-hand side. And also in the terms of the Malachim, we say, Mimini Michael, Umismoli Gabriel. Michael is the Malach who's Melamed Chus Anam Yisrael. And Gabriel is the Malach who always punishes the goyim. Michael is the Malach of water, and Gabriel is the Malach of fire. And therefore, those two things are right and left. And here too, we find that the shofar is on the right, that which connects the Kodesh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael, and that which punishes is on the left. That's the fire. Now, this is kind of like this. By this esnachta, after we call, we're kind of finishing the overview. Now we're going to describe in greater detail what happened there. First, Vayikru Cherev LaHashem L'Gidon. First they called out a sword for our God and a sword for Gan, for Gidon as well. Vayamdu Ish Tachtov. But they stood firm. They didn't go down. Bear in mind, it doesn't seem like they had any weapons. As soon as they did, their weapons were not drawn.
I was going to say, I think that this is a, if you're going to translate it that small of the Yad, you mean that this is an extraordinary act of faith. Extraordinary.
That's right, and that's why they left the third side open. They left the fourth side open, because they didn't have the weapons with which to wage war. What they hoped is that the Midianites would retreat in the other direction. And we'll see what happens when the Midianites retreated. This was also planned. Vayamdu ish tachtov sovi l'machnes. They stood their ground. All the people in the camp down below started running. Vayariu, the people in the camp down below gave truth. They tried to regroup. Vayanusu, but that just caused more confusion and it caused them to run away even more. Vayisku shlosh me'olos ha'shofros. And as a result of the blowing of the 300 shofros, I don't know if they blew again or we're just recapping. Vayosem Hashem et Cherev Ishbreu, God caused each of them, of the Midianites, to fight each other. Uvachol HaMachneh, and in the entire camp was under this self-imposed siege. Vayonas HaMachneh, and the camp started running. Ad Beis HaShita Tzreirasa. To Beis HaShita, to Tzreira, Ad Tzfas Ovel Mechola, to the edge of the plain Mechola, which is Al Tabas, which is near Tabor. Now, I don't know why none of the four should pick up on this. But Beis HaShita. Where's Shita mentioned in Chumash? Can't look at the notes. That's cheating.
No, it's
listen. It says at the end of Parshas Balak,
also somebody fled.
I don't remember that one. This is what it says, so I can tell you explicitly. Ayeshev Yisrael b'shitim. Vayochel ha'am liznoso v'nosmo. Whose suggestion was that? Whose suggestion? What? Bilam's suggestion. Bilam from which country? Midian. In fact, who was the girl who was killed? Cosby Batur in the sea Midian, right? Cosby Batur, Roshumos, they saw the Midian who? So what does it mean here? Abbas HaShita. This was revenge for the acts of Shittim. It was not for naught, not a coincidence that they were pursued or that they fled Beis HaShita. There was still a punishment for that great sin which had caused Am Yisrael to sin. Tzeirasa. Why Tzeirasa? What does Tzeirasa represent? Tzeirasa Midyanim. When the final command came by Kodesh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu, the last thing he's supposed to do before he dies, Tzeirasa Midyanim Kisem Osam Kitzorim Heim Lachem B'Nichlehem Asher Niklu Lachem Al Dvar Por. Personally, Tzeirasa, this was a fulfillment of the Tzeirasa Midyanim Kisem Osam. In other words, this is still part of the affliction which Hakadosh Baruch Hu afflicted Midian for that great aveira which they caused Am Yisrael to be choite by the Shittim many, many years ago. So this is obviously not just a coincidence. This is a clear sign from Hakadosh Baruch Hu of the divine providence of this war. Vayitzayk
ish Yisrael.
Excuse me.
It was very nice.
Yeah.
It was impressive. But you did have the job.
Well, I can't. You're right.
You can't assume that.
You're right.
Not chila that it's based on shita because of shitim.
Yeah.
And it's rata because of tzoros and midyanim, and it's part of them. Lachol ha'adabat is.
You're right. I can see the point. I didn't know what to do at the end of the puzzle. You're right. I tried to slip that one by you. Granted. No, but I wrote half of it ain't bad. Okay. Vayisoyk eli ish Yisrael minatoli minasher. Now then, the Jews were alerted. Now, the Malbim says, these are the 22,000 guys who had been in reserve. The Malbim said they weren't told to go home because they were the Yorei Zechorei. They went to the fearful of war. But as Gideon said, because Hashem told Gideon explicitly, they should be so fair. They should wait till tomorrow morning and then they should go home. Why did Hashem tell Gideon they should wait till tomorrow morning and then go home? So they'll be waiting in the back, and they still have the weapons. And once the alarm went out, they were the ones who went in hot pursuit. The 300 people did their job, and now the 22,000 came to cut them off and destroy them. They're the ones who pursued Midian. Now Gideon says, this is all happening in the middle of the night. Gideon quickly sent messengers to Ephraim. Now remember, what tribe was Gideon from? Which tribe was he from? Asher. He only sent messengers to Ephraim now. This is going to be have repercussions later on. Lamor, and he said to the Ephraimites, Reduli cross Midian, now go down to Midian. Now bear in mind, the Midianites are running back towards the Jordan River. Right? And cut them off. By Beis Bara and Etziyar, they make a pincers around them. And all the Ephraimites got together. They secure the water passes at Beis Bara and Etziyar. And then in the course of securing this area, they got the two powerful generals of Midian. It's Oreg Vezeiv. The Orev is, of course, the crow. I think it's a crow or a raven, I'm not sure. Raven. Vetazev, Zev, and the fox. Vayaguis Orev, Betsur Orev. They killed Orev in a place which then became known as the Rock of Orev. Vezev, and they killed Zev, Beyekev Zev. You wonder why Zev is a Jewish name. Zev is not exactly one of these good guys here. Vayirfus Midian. El Midian, they kept running after Midian. Verosh Orev Zeev, the heads of Orev and Zeev, Hebio Gidon Me'eva Yadin, they brought Gidon to the other side of the Jordan. Now, back on the West Bank. Now, I'd like to address Orev and Zeev just for a moment, which is that Orev, of course, and is a bird, and Ze'ev is an animal. The Orev, however, represents the animals which personify, the bird which personifies evil. Reb Tzadik, I wrote, quoting a line from Reb Tzadik, Ha'orev shememuna b'tsuros roz. The raven is in charge of bringing bad tidings. Vivnei achzor yuso, because the raven is very cruel. V'kach kolo kufresh. And that's why his call is kar, kar, kar. Why? Because shem asfun de shikla. The letters kufresh are the letters which make up the word sheker. Hi, you ask, what about the shin? So kuf plus resh equals shin. So that's taken care of. So that's, those are letters, kufresh are the letters of the word sheker. And of course, so, hey, this will be important, I'll tell you why. Because if you take a little peek ahead, it's interesting that later on in Perikhes Pasuk Yud, you'll see that we're going to talk about a place called Karkor. Kufresh, kufresh. Which is interesting. But in the meantime, and of course, the fox represents treachery, slyness, in a negative sense. So these two generals represented evil, in cruelty, in the sense of the raven, and slyness and treachery, in the sense of the fox, and they were here killed. And this was a great military victory for the Jews. We'll talk about it in a few minutes in greater detail. But in the meantime, remember the Ephraimites were called late. They were...
Two things. So
one earlier on and one now. Before you ask the question, if I can interject, it seems, although I've never checked it up in the Koran Tanakh, but I have a hunch from the division here that the Prokim and Nach are also made up by Goyim. Because this is not a natural place to divide up a Perek. It is not a continuation of the previous story. Yeah.
This isn't a Vayavi with
head.
Grosh or Reb with
head. Yeah. It's not a Jewish thing, right? To cut off heads and bring the heads to Gittel.
I don't know, I'm just thinking of any other instance.
Yeah, I don't know where it happens. It's a very strange thing, you're right. Certainly not. I didn't see anybody pick up on it, but the fact that it's not a Jewish thing. Yehudis cut up whole of Hornets' head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you, Sister Jill, the stakes are... Yeah, no. Yeah, going to
cut
off.
That's a
valid point.
The largest thing, or anyone, the five, seven stratagems...
Eight.
That Gideon used, by that we explain why there was the Easter home. Strategic study is going to just permit me, this one particular encounter was determined earlier, was predetermined by other factors, not three positives on the part of the three negative on the part of the Midian.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
One is, if I just went earlier on, it says, Vayalo mitachat ve'enet.
They were in the valley.
Yeah, that is, they violated rule number one.
That's right. No cabin as well.
The height of the... Mm-hmm. That's known in Eretz Yisrael, in Canaan, the height of the enet. That's one. Secondly, the pasuk, just a shock. There were too many of them. They were stepping on each other's shoulder, on each other's feet, encouraged the confusion, that it was disproportionate. And sometimes armies are too large for the purpose that they end. You think the more the merrier, but particularly American military strategy. The size will determine. And the third is that they apparently, the element of surprise. The guards were lax. They were busy talking to each other, exchanging schmutzing, and they didn't take note of the fact that Gideon and
Pura came
and
up.
His aide de camp, quote unquote, were running around in the bushes. Yeah. Those three things alone would be sufficient to determine that there were other ones.
We have to bear in mind, we're going to see in a minute, there were 135,000 people in this camp, and there are 300 Jews. I mean, even with all their mistakes, obviously their mistakes came from overconfidence, granted. But even with the mistakes they made because of overconfidence, still the ratio of 135,000 to 300 should certainly lead them to strategic advantage, no matter how badly they messed up by being in a valley. And especially since the 300 were unarmed. So obviously there was a tremendous Siyata Dishmaya in the effectiveness of creating the confusion here.
Even before Gidon told him,
they made mistakes. Right, you're right.
You had three things which are
which they did wrong. That's true. You can't deny that. In the meantime, the Ephraim might have said, now you have to understand, there was obviously tension way back from Egypt between Ephraim and Manasseh. Right? Manasseh and Ephraim by the bracha, Sikkelos Yodok Manasseh Bechor. And since then, Ephraim took pride in their being the leaders. They had received the Bechorah bracha over Manasseh. So needless to say, if Manasseh, not the younger brother, but the lower brother, takes the initiative, the Ephraimites were upset. And they talked and said, Vayomri love, and bear in mind, who came from Ephraim? Joshua. The first Shaitan, it was still regarded, we've said many prakim ago, not so many, that when Devorah became the Shofetis, where did she judge from? From Shevet Ephraim, even though she was from Zvulun or Yitzchak, I forget which one, or Naphtali, she was from Naphtali. She judged from Ephraim, because Ephraim, since the time Yeshua, was the seat of the Shofetim. So they were very, very annoyed about this. Vayomer lo Ish Ephraim, and if the Ephraimites said, this is all in the middle of the war. Why? What did you do to us? Levilti so close, Lanu, not to call us. And you went to fight against Midian, and he didn't call us to come with you first. And they fought with him bitterly. They were very upset at him. So Gideon said, trying to appease them, Masisi atokachem. What have I done which is as great as you have done it? Halotov Olos Ephraim, the last grapes which are harvested by Ephraim. Olos are the last grapes left on the vine. Who the last grapes left on the vine was which Ephraim had just kept taken care of? What had Ephraim done? Who did they just kill? Who are the two grapes sitting on a plate now in front of Gideon? The two heads of Zev and Ores. So he's saying to them, Hello, Tovo, Olo, Zephraim, these two grapes which you picked are better Mitzir Aviezer from the bountiful first harvest which Aviezer, my tribe, Aviezer was his clan in Shevet and Manasseh, who was saying, although it's true we did the initial work, but look, you guys did the greatest acts of the war. You got Zev and Ores. And in your hands, God gave over the officers of Midian. You're very strong, obviously. What could I do like you? You're so strong. So two things he said. First of all, you had the prize feet. Besides that, you obviously are very strong people. Then they stopped complaining against him. The Dabra Dover is when he was speaking this. Now, yeah. Said what? He didn't like Ephraim?
He said, no, that Kadosh Baruch Hu came to him and said, this is a Melchemet Mitzvah, you're the one that I've chosen to go forward, and this is what you're doing.
I don't know if that's true. You know, that would be a very good complaint against Gideon, and I think that's valid.
And in other words,
it can make figuring with Gideon's personality in general. But I think, though, however, that it's not 100% clear that what he's saying is true, because in the final analysis, Gideon could have called for Ephraim and had them undergone the selection. So some of the 300 people were from Shevet Ephraim. This way, none of the 300 were from Ephraim at all. So you could say, it could be that you're right. I just don't know if it's true or not true. That Kadosh Baruch Hu told him, call from these Shvatim specifically. And Gideon didn't want to say that. Gideon was not a capable or not enough of a believer to mention that. I don't know.
Also, again, the time factor, if according to the fortune, this was
very
Gideon
quickly
was called on whatever it was,
yeah.
Yom Yishon Shal Kol HaMoed, all right? And just had
there was not enough time for
the second or the maximum, the
yeah.
third, because of the what was it, the Solim?
Right, the barley, yeah.
All right? There wasn't much time, and you're the element of surprise. You don't want the word
right.
to get out. The more people know, the more movement from different places. The media
right.
is going to...
I think you're right. I think that it's a good point. I think that here, well, key element was that here he was trying to flatter Ephraim. It was not, he could have given many legitimate excuses, but instead, and this will be crucial later on, he chose to flatter Ephraim and try and butter them up. Why? It's a power play. Later on, when the war is over, if everybody's happy with him, so he'll be able to get along better. Okay, we'll see if that's true. We'll see if that carries out.
The real could have been nothing. The real could have been angry with them if he had not called them at all.
Yeah.
I mean, once they were running, they were fleeing, the legion was gone.
Right.
The battle was determined.
But he said, after I called you,
he gives them a part of it. We want to assume that there was booty.
Yeah, there was plenty, sure.
If Brian therefore gets
got
the
part of the booty,
percentage,
yeah.
A nice cut.
Yeah. You're right. So all this will probably figure in later on. Makes sense that it'll play a role later on when the peace comes by, when there's a peace dividend. But bear in mind, again, this is all in the middle of the night. Day has not yet broken yet. Gidon came to the Jordan River. Overu, he's passing over. Ushlosh mil sayisha sharito, and the 300 people are with him. Ayefim veroifim. They're tired, and they're yet pursuing. So he came to the city called Sukkos, and he said to the people of Sukkos, "Tnu kikros lechem la'am asher b'ragloi. Give loaves of bread to the nation which are at my feet." In other words, who are with me? Because they're tired. Vanochi rodef, and I am pursuing acharei zevach v'tzamuna. I'm pursuing zevach and tzamuna malchei midyan, the kings of Midyan. In other words, the generals we got, but we didn't get the kings yet. We're after them.
That's a really mixed metaphor here.
The Zevach and Tamuna, right?
Yeah, no. Before that, the Pesach, they come to Sukkot. Tnuna, Kikros Lechem, Matzot.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Could be that, there's a law that soldiers in the heat of battle are allowed to eat tarfus. They're allowed even to eat pigs in order to sustain themselves. So it could be that bread means, even bread we're allowed to eat today, even though it's Pesach. Because we're in the heat of battle. It's a good point. They're Jewish.
They're Jewish.
They're Jewish. But I'm saying, even that bread, that's good enough. But I'm not sure, maybe, bread matzah is also called bread, especially in the old days when they had the thick matzot, like the teimanim. So maybe that's why it's called bread. But, no, right, a lachmani is called lechem. Then they were always round though. They were always pito. They were always round. Vayomer Sarai Sarai Sukkot. Now it's interesting. The Malbim picks up on this very very nicely. Says he asked from the people of Sukkot, who responded. Sarai Sukkot. The guard, the officials of Sukkot responded, and they said Hakab Zevach Betzamuna Tavi Adecha is. The Targum Yonatan explains, is it as if Zevach and Samona Akaf was like as if the Zevach and Samona are now in your hands? Ki nitin esvach alachem, that we should give your army bread. Vayomer Gidon, so Gidon said lachem, since you won't give me bread, b'seis Hashem as Zevach and Samona biyodi, when I do get Zevach and Samona, v'dashti es besarchem, I am going to thresh your flesh as kotzei amidbar with the thorns of the desert, vesa barkodim and the thistles. Not a very Jewish thing, but he's upset.
Is this your thresh of flesh?
That's my translation. But in any event, so the Malbim picks up here on the Anshin Sori, and the Malbim says that Gideon had two legitimate requests for bread. One is al tzedakah, do us a chesed. We're poor Jews, hungry Jews, running after the enemy. Give us a food to eat. The other is a military request. Since we're a military force, give us food to eat. So, from the Anshei Sukkos, he asked as tzedakah. From the Sarei Sukkos, he asked as military supplies. And neither of them gave him. But the Sarei Sukkot, they had a legitimate response. They said, we're afraid to give it to you. Militarily, we're afraid to support you in your endeavor. Why? Because never can tell when the Midianites are going to come back. And when they come back, they'll take retribution from anybody who helped you out. So therefore, their response, later on we're going to see.
They're supposed to be our allies.
What?
Right.
He's fighting their fight.
But still, their complaint was, look, they lived in the Avar Yarden. They lived on the east bank of the Jordan. Things were always rough on the east bank of the Jordan.
Right.
So they didn't want to cover themselves. They didn't want to take any chances. They said, who knows what Zevon and Salmon are going to do next. We can't take any chances. You have to sense the middle of the night. All of a sudden, these 300 guys show up at your doorstep. And they say, we're battling the 135,000 soldiers of Midian.
Who are no longer 135,000.
But they don't know that. They have no way of knowing that, right? The people of Sukkot.
Yeah, but if 135,000 people were fleeing across the yard.
No, a lot of them were dead to try
so
to fight.
So 50,000 were fleeing across the yard in the middle of the night?
Yeah, we don't know, yeah.
They probably would have been Zebach and Salmuna would have been...
15,000, if it's going to tell. 1-5.
Okay.
All right. So certainly they're afraid that
and
the others will come back.
People of Sukkot were still tired from the Seder and they were just... Right,
makes sense.
You know, we're an afterthought on this.
Yeah.
It's still difficult to comprehend what you're doing to betray your own people.
It's true. You're right. It's true. You're right. They are. You're right. They certainly were divided. It's certainly true that they were divided and the Shvatim didn't support each other. That was the whole milieu of the time of the Shoftim. There was very little unity, achdus between the Shvatim and Am Yisrael. That's really what the kings later on were supposed to achieve. Yeah. They really didn't have that kind of group unity. Vayamisham Penua. Okay, in the meantime, he didn't get anything at Sukkot. Next, they went to Penua. Vaydaber Lem Kozos. He said the same thing. Vayanu also Anshei Penua. It's interesting. Here there were no officers. I guess there was no military garrison there or no officials there. There, the Anshei Penua, the people of Penua, answered him, and they said to them, Anshei Penuel said, Kasharanu Anshei Sukkot, the same thing which the people of Sukkot said, which is, the people of Sukkot said, like their officers, we're not giving you anything. Yeah, they said low with an olive. It's interesting though, therefore, perhaps since they had no sorim, therefore the punishment intended was less. Fayomer Gam Anshei Penuel, he said to the people of Penuel, Lemor, the following, B'shvi B'shalom, when I come back in peace, Et Totes Amitol Haseh, I'm going to destroy your tower. In other words, you said we're afraid of the repercussions. Therefore, we don't want to support you even through tzedakah. Well, what is your bitachon on your tower? On your fortified tower, I'm going to show you that fortifications won't do you any good if you don't help your fellow Jew. When I come back, I'm going to destroy that tower over there. That's what he said to them. V'zevach v'tzamona. In the meantime, Zevach v'tzamona were in Karkor. And we said before, it's interesting, Karkor is a language of, obviously, so the letters Kufresh are considered to be very negative, and Zevon Samon, of course, were the root of all this evil here. Umachaneim Imon, and their camp was with them, Kechameshes Osor Elas, 15,000 people. All of these Nosorim we call Machaneim B'nei Kedem. This is all the remnants, all that which was left. Because from the original camp, Vanoflim, those who had fallen so far, Me'ov Esrim El for 120,000 people, Sholev Chorev, warriors who carried swords. Vayal.
This is from that second group that came in.
Oh, this is the
22,000 right after.
No. Though these are 15,000 left from the camp of the enemy. The 22,000 pursuers were finished off. 120,000 out of the original camp of 135,000. Mm-hmm. And 15,000 managed to flee with Zevach and Samuna and were now in Karkur. Vayal Gidon derech ha-shchuni ba'olim. Gidon went up through the Bedouins. Shchuni ba'olim, those who live in the tents. Mikenem le-Novach, east of Novach, v'yog b'ha. Vayach ha-machaneh, and he smote their camp. And this machaneh was unsuspecting. Obviously, again, Gideon used strategy here. He came up in an unconventional way. He didn't come by the road. He came up from the Bedouin side, which obviously was a side which he left unprotected. And he killed and he destroyed their camp. Vayinusu Zevach Tzamuna. Zevach Tzamuna tried to run away. Vayidof Achreim. Gideon ran after them. Vayokodesh Neimachim Midian. And he captured the two kings of Midian. As Zevach and Samona, Zevach and Samona, the Chol Amachneh Hechrid, and all of the rest of the camp he destroyed as he eradicated as well.
Hechrid?
Yeah, Echarid here is literally means he caused them to fear, but here... Yeah, but...
One doesn't want to speculate, but there's a logical place where there may have been a death. Echarid.
Oh, it would have been Echarid with a base. Oh, I don't know. The Echarid wouldn't fit in either, because Echarid usually goes on buildings, not on people. A Korban doesn't go ever on a nation, it goes on a structure. So Echarid wouldn't, I don't think, would fit in either. Echarid means here, according to the Mitzvot David, it means he scared them so that they couldn't save Zevach and Samuna. That's what the Mitzvot David says.
And why they're named by the people?
I don't know. Obviously, you know, again, you know, I tried to figure out what the significance of the names Zevach and Samuna were, and I didn't come up with anything good. So, I don't have obviously there certainly is significance to their names. As a matter of fact, this victory is recorded by David HaMelech in Tehillim. David HaMelech says in Tehillim Pei Gimel, which is one of the ones we say in times of great travail in the land of Israel, we say about our enemies, Shisemo Nedivemo, make their leaders be like Orei V'Kizev, U'Kizevach V'Kitzalmuno Kom Sichemo. And all their princes should have the fate befall them which befell Zevach and Samuna. So obviously these were great historical figures.
Also, if you want to go, there's a straining it, obviously, but since you've started it.
Yeah.
There's with Bilam, Vayamu Zvachim.
Yeah.
Zevach and Samuna can break down into seven.
No, yeah, I was thinking about that. I was thinking Selim is Selim, Samuna is Selim Na. Like we say, Sarti Lame Aleim, which is said by the Parsha Shlach, that their Selim Elohim has left them, right? The literally means their shade has left them there in Parsha Shlach. It's talking about Canaan. And Yoshua Malkosh Baruch Hu, the Yoshua calls it Moshe Rabbeinu, that their Selim Elohim has left them in an allegorical sense. And here too can mean that this person had no Tzelem Elohim. He was so corrupt and so evil with Salmuna that his Tzelem Elohim had already disappeared from him. But I don't know, I have no proof for that, and I'm not sure how so solid such a Jewish would be. So that's why I wouldn't have presented it had you not brought it up. So in any event, Vayoshev Gideon ben Yosh min ha-milchama. Gideon ben Yosh returns from the war, Milamaleh HaChores, before sunrise. Milamaleh HaChores here is refers to the sun. Chores is one name for the sun. And before the sun rose, Gideon returns back from war. Gideon always fought at night. Everything Gideon did from the beginning. Right, when he went and he destroyed the Mizbeach in his parents' hometown of Ophrah, he destroyed it at night as well. That's why perhaps we're mentioning here Ben Yoash. Even when he rebelled against his father the very first time, that too was at night. And why at night? Not because he was inside, because he was Miktani Amona. Because he wasn't bold enough, emboldened enough by his Emuna to do things in the open. He always had to do things under the cover of the dark of night. And that perhaps too has to do with the fact that he's Ben Yoash. Why? Because his father was a priest for Avodah Zarah. So he always had lurking at the back of his mind this superstition, this Avodah Zarah background. I also would like to play around with the word Yoash and make it into Yeush. And he had this what's the word in English? This sense of despair.
Defeatism,
good word.
And also Orei, also the
raven
is known
as the raven. Raven is black, or a could be. And also, I think Chores here also represents a Cheres. And we mentioned already in the first paragraph of Shoftim that wherever we find, Cheres represents many things in Sefer Shoftim, alludes to a Cheres, to show broken promise. In other words, something which showed great promise, which subsequently shattered and broke, and like broken pottery. And Gideon was also a little bit of a cheres, not a little bit, a lot, we're going to see a little lot of cheres. Whereas ultimately, the promise which he showed broke down. Just like the broken pitchers which held the lapidim, he himself broke down in the end. By a code Narmianchi Sukkos. So he grabbed the person, a kid, from the people of Sukkot, because now he has Zevach and someone he was going to show them. Right, Shalit. And he asked him to write, Vaychtov Elav, and this kid wrote down, Sorei Sukkot Vezkineh, the officials of Sukkot and its elders, Shivim Veshiva, 77 people. Evel Nachi Sukkot, he came to be with Sukkot, so Yomi said, Hinei Zevach v'tzamona. Here are Zevach and Tzamona, Asher Cheiratem Osi, concerning whom you mocked me, or who you blasphemed against me, literally. Lemora kav Zevach and Tzamona tabidecha. Is it as if Zevach and Tzamona are now in your hands? Hinitein lecha, that we should give you, Anoshech, we should give your tired people lachem, hayefim lachem. Vaikach Zikneir. Now look, it's in Malvin has a beautiful diak in this passage. He says, Vaikach Zikneir, he took the elders of the city, that's Kotzei Midbar, and the thorns of the desert, that's the Barkonim and the thistles, Vayoda Bohem, and he took very interesting language. He made known with them, he made known them, he introduced to them, to the thorns and thistles, Anche Sukkos, the people of Sukkos. So the Malvin has a beautiful deity. He says, who got punished? What? The thistles, yeah. No, that's how the Malvin says. Who got punished? The Anche Sukkos. What happened to the sorry? The Malvin says, he took the officers and had the officers punish the people of Sukkos. And the Malvin is interesting. He has an interesting deity. He says that the people of Sukkos are the one against whom there was truly a complaint. The leaders of Sukkos, they had a military cheshbon. They said, we can't do it because we're afraid of Midian. The people of Sukkos, they were just damn cruel. They should have given tzedakah to the people, to their fellow Jews who were in need. So therefore, Gideon said, you elders have to punish your people who weren't sensitive to the tzedakah needs of our soldiers. It's interesting track. By Yoda Bahem Asanchi Sukkos means he took the 77 elders and had them punish their subjects for not having done the right thing.
Could you elaborate, be more explicit about the punishment?
He didn't want to kill them.
He didn't want to
kill
them.
No killing. There's going to be next boss who's going to be killing. No killing. He didn't want to kill them. That's Migdal Penuel. Then he went to Migdal Penuel, Notatz, and he tore down the Migdal. And he killed the people of the city. So all the Mepharshim are bothered by this. First of all, he didn't tell them this originally. He didn't say, I'm going to kill you guys. Just said, I'm going to pull down the tower. Right, and it's not fair. The other guys, he just, tortured, and these guys, he's killing. And the contrary, it sounds before like they weren't as bad, because they didn't have any leaders to teach them the right derech or whatever, so therefore all he's going to do is tear down their tower. So the Radak says a very logical thing. The Radak says, they hold up in the tower and they try to fight against Gideon. So they all got killed in the course of destroying the bat. Right, they all got killed in the course of destroying the tower. Right, they defended themselves, so Gideon had no choice but to kill them in order to fulfill his original promise. So that seems to be the most reasonable pshat in the pasuk. Vayomer Zevach Tzamona. Then after he got rid of Penuel and Sukkos, then he turned to Zevach Tzamona themselves. And he said, very interesting, the Malbim is a very, very fascinating shot in this pasuk. He said to Zevach Tzamona, Eifo Anoshim Asher Harachtem in Tavor. Eifo here means who. Who are the people you killed in Tavor? Vayomer, they said, Kamocha Kamohem. You know, they look like you. Echad Kisor Bnei Melech. And one of them, or looked like a son of a king. In other words, like one of your sons. As if he would have been your son. That's what they said. Vayomer, Gideon responded, Achai b'nei mihen. They were my cousin, my brothers. Chai Hashem, by the life of God, lu'achisem osam lo harakti. That's good. Were you to leave them alive, I would not kill you. So Solomon says, what's going on here?
Where did you hear that army were arrested?
We didn't have it. Never had it before. So it wasn't in last week. It was new. So the Malvin says, this is a war crimes trial. He says, had Zevach and Tzamona just waged war against the Jews, how can you put them to death? War is fair. Okay, it's not right to kill, after World War II, they didn't kill Hirohito. He didn't do anything wrong. They didn't kill. They killed the people who committed atrocities, the war criminals. So the same thing was here, true here as well. He couldn't kill Zev and Samun unless they had committed an atrocity beyond the battlefield. He said, you know, you guys did something very wrong. You killed people in Tavor, which was not on the battlefield. Why did you do that? So they said, well, because they look like you. And we thought since they look like you, they were your children. And just like you rebelled against us, they rebelled against us as well. They were part of the rebellion. So Gideon says, they weren't involved in the rebellion at all. They were my brothers, but they weren't involved in the rebellion. You had no right to kill them. The people in Tavor, they weren't rebelling against you. Therefore, for that, I'm going to put you to death. That's where they go. That's what they killed. Not for the war they waged. For the war, that's the, you know, the rules. As long as they follow the Geneva Convention, they're okay. But for the atrocities, for killing people who weren't in the battlefield, that you're killed for. And that works in the pshat, even if you don't hold like the Malbim to the fullest extent. But it does make sense. In other words, he's saying, Tavor wasn't in the battlefield. What right did you have to go kill people there? The fact that you killed people there, that's why I'm killing you. Yeah.
Again, it creates problems, and maybe it solves some of them.
Yeah.
That it's linking it up with earlier, with the two shomrim.
Yeah.
Outside the machanet.
The two shomrim, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe, as I'm reminded, of course, of the midrashim about Paro Melech Mitzrayim.
Yeah.
And he had a chalom, he had a nevuah, the chartumim told him, there's a likelihood that there was, the likelihood that there was, there's somebody, Moshe Rabbeinu, who's going to come and he's got Mitzrayim.
Yeah.
And it's challenging, and therefore his attempt
right.
at the call out.
Right, that's
and it's prevented to avoid it. Therefore, they may have attempted it, and that perhaps explains the fact that the two guards were privy to the fact that there was something about a Gidon.
I'm talking about a Gidon that already had been.
The word was already out
that Gidon was on the warpath. That could be. That, in other words, they knew about the Gidon already.
But then, of course, with Paro Melech Mitzrayim was it was.
Well, the parallel doesn't have to be complete, but it's an interesting parallel. Yeah.
It was Paro who went back to tell about the.
So, it's an interesting parallel, though, that here already they had heard about it beforehand, and therefore they were nervous and they were trying to kill all the children, which would be similar to that. So it's in it. Let's just do one more pasuk. Vayomel Yeser Bechoro, Gideon said to Yeser his Bechor, Kumar Ogosam, get up and kill Zavach and Samuna. V'lo Shalaf Anar Charbo, he didn't want to do it because Kiore, he was afraid, Kiore then Anar, because he was still a child. So it's interesting. Yeser. Whose name is Yeser?
Yisro.
Where is he from? Kohen Midjan. So it's almost, it seems clear that he was grooming his son from a young age. Gideon was grooming his son Yeser to be the Yisro, just like Yisro was able to overcome spiritually Midjan and go over to Judaism. So too he was grooming his son Yeser to be the person who would fight and ultimately assist him in eradicating Midian, and here he wanted Yeser to deliver the coup de grace. Well, Yeser wasn't willing to do so, and we'll see what happened next week, and then we'll see also the downfall of Gideon and his family subsequently.